condition, my condition was ill. I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, I'm Hogface Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 33, NASDAQ Futures up 358. We were up a bunch yesterday, not this much, and then sank through the day and ended up pretty much unchanged. Actually, we're down on the S&Ps. This morning we have 3M with good earnings up 940. We have... General Motors beats on earnings, raises guidance amid resilient vehicle pricing. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, yes, you do.
Now, does that translate into they raise prices? And then we got President, I don't even want to describe the man, is going to put a 50% tariff on GM cars coming in from Canada. And he found some 1930s law that, despite what the Supreme Court said, the tariffs are like from Congress. You can throw tariffs in. You know, I can't...
Well, wait a minute. What's if you don't like the fact that there's a law that's out there that gives a president an authority to do something, why didn't you in the intervening 85, 90 years repeal it?
What percentage of all laws you think on the books are total artifacts that haven't been used?
A very large percentage, and all of them will be used to shove it in and break it off in your back door.
Yep.
At any time that it's convenient for somebody that happens to want something you've got. And oh, by the way, Obama has just gone after Vance, claiming that, oh, well, you know, there's something wrong with you if you think that doing that kind of thing is, because I happen to be black, is wrong. Excuse me, we're supposed to live in a country where that's not a valid reason to privilege someone. And oh, by the way, Sonny Holston just tried to do the same thing with her son, who deliberately walked right past a no trespassing sign onto a railroad right of way, an energized electric railroad right of way, may I add. And when the cops showed up to cite him for trespassing, I think that the better choice would have been if he just stepped on the third rail. It would have been,
you know,
that would have ended those problems.
You know how many people, like several people have died in the Chicago area by...
Oh, no kidding, Chief, you, including the guy back when I used to live there who jumped a fence, okay, onto the CTA rails and pissed on the third rail.
He's not alone.
Well, I understand that, but you know what? Do you know why they get so pissed off about that? Because his family successfully sued the CTA.
Well.
All right, so, you know, I mean, come on. I am.
I don't know what that's got to do with tariffs, but whatever.
Well, it has to do with citing something of privilege that says that you shouldn't give this guy a citation and make him show up on a trespassing
well,
charge because I'm black and Latino.
I don't know what...
My son doesn't go to jail because of it.
Well, we got an awful lot of privileged white people don't go to jail either.
We have an awful lot... Yep, and you know what? It's not supposed to work no matter who you are.
I get that. Do you think the Tates are ever going to jail?
Well, you know, they might this time.
Well, if they get over to Britain, they will.
Well,
Aren't they buddies of the president's kid?
Well, here's... Okay, so just a... For those who are unaware, they're apparently fighting extradition. That is a loser. If you ever find yourself in a situation where you know, you're in a different state or a different country or whatever, you try to do that, it is almost impossible to win those. I mean, you're entitled to due process law.
Well, my world, I look at the numbers so much. I don't even know who these guys are. I mean, I guess everybody else seems to know who they are. I don't.
They're influencers who have repeatedly been cited with allegations of abusing women.
What do you mean by influencers?
On all over the internet. Hey, okay. Man, we make you know, this, that, whatever. Okay, and but they have been it's been repeatedly claimed that they're extraordinarily abusive to women in a sexual sort of fashion. And
seemingly like for a long time.
Like we're talking like rape.
Yeah, like for like years.
We're not talking about catcalling somebody. We're talking about actual real abuse, not bullshit. And for a very long period of time, they don't look
that old. They started this in what, 2010?
Yeah, somehow they've managed to stay out of jail, okay? And but they've got warrants out for additional cases, and something like 38 charges or something like that. It's not some small, you know, it's not like one or two, right? It's a bunch. But they got grabbed because that is an extraditable offense out of the United States. Essentially, the only way you can win in those situations, if you try to say, oh, no, I'm going to fight extradition, is that the thing that you are being, that they're asking for, has to be not a crime in the place where you get grabbed. Okay, now, last time I checked, sexual assault's a crime in the United States, so bye-bye. Yeah. I mean, they're gonna lose, all right? But they're entitled to do that. One problem with fighting extradition is that you've just, by doing that, you have declared to the court that you do not believe that whatever it is you're accused of is actually an offense. Now, that has a habit of winding up with you being denied bond, because essentially what you've said is this is BS, and therefore I don't submit to the jurisdiction of the court. Well, go ahead and make that argument to a judge and see what happens.
Yeah.
He usually says into jail you go until this is done, because if I don't lock you up, you're probably going to run. So, you know, yeah.
Well, we have, I mean, this weekend, in addition to going back and forth to Menards, it seemed all weekend, but I was talking to some people who are Trumpers. You know, we're really, you know, if the guy says he's 210 pounds, he's 210 pounds. I mean, there's no, one actually told me he's never told a lie in his life. All right, so anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, so. But I'm looking at this, and sometimes I question people that can get away with this, which he obviously does. People get away with this. Is it the rest of society doesn't even begin to understand that they can check some of this stuff themselves? I don't like the. I'm looking at, right? Allegedly, yes, they were putting 50% tariffs on Canada. Because the guy from Ontario insulted him. Okay, that's the real cause here. So now I'm looking at, all right, I don't know. I guess I could have looked up the booze thing, but I'm looking at the autos. All right, now autos, we've talked how long, Carl, about regular people can't afford a car. Now the cars that we import from Canada, there is no such thing as a Canadian car. There's not like a carny that you can buy a brand. There are Chevys and Fords and those kinds of things that are assembled there and imported here for our people here to buy. So do we really think that penalizing GM and Jeep, they do a lot of Jeeps up there, I guess, and putting a 50% top on our $75,000 truck already here, that this is good for us? I mean, is there any thought process whatsoever? And I think you and I, maybe it was Hal and I, years ago when he first started doing this, did a deep dive into the dairy markets. And I'm sitting myself this morning driving down, and I go, you know, I think we're a net exporter to Canada. So how the hell are they screwing us? So this morning.
There
can be nuances, but the fact is.
I was going to say that. Sounds like
okay,
a
but
crap.
All right, but we export $1 billion worth of dairy to Canada. We import $350 million. Mm-hmm. So there's not an obvious screwing there anywhere, is there?
I mean, no, that's not necessarily true. I think that's
they protect. They protect, and I actually went through this and remember it. They protect their dairy farmers to the point where if they didn't protect them somewhat, our guys would run all over them. Okay.
Well, they don't protect them somewhat. They've essentially the problem isn't so much that, it's the cheese production, and apparently, And Chief, this is true in a lot of cases.
Everybody does this. Everybody does this.
Well, but this is true in a lot of cases and in a lot of countries. All right, we do it too. All right, so let's.
But we're never going to tell anybody that. That's my bitch here is the ignorance of this. When people over the course of this guy's expanse in Washington, I've had this conversation with like several people. I think what happens on the dairy side, at least on some of it, because it's really pretty complicated. They have a certain amount. That where the their tariffs on stuff coming in is small up to a certain point, okay? Because they want to have some dairy farmers still alive in Canada. Should say we get a president that doesn't like Canada, they want some ability to provide their own stuff. And once you get over a certain level, I think the tariffs jump from here to Canada, which is, by the way, the same thing we do with lumber, same thing we do with sugar. Same thing Japan does with rice. Japan says, okay, we'll import some rice, but you know what? We have to protect the Japanese farmers at a point where, as everybody gets pissed off at everybody, we can at least eat. So there's a base number at which the sugar here is the perfect example, isn't it? Got it out of memory, Carl. Isn't it 4 cents a pound for the first X? And then once we go over that, it's like 12 or something?
Right, and There's all sorts of things like this that countries have done this forever, right? It's not a new thing, but this is one of the soft underbellies of so-called free global trade that, frankly, I've got all kinds of problems with, and this goes back to the founders, Chief, and the premise that they had in that. Well, we should trade with everybody because, and I've heard this from many.
Well, we had serious tariffs in those days for printing and all kinds of stuff.
Well, we funded the government with it, right? I mean, it was before you had income tax, which got thrown out a bunch of different times.
Well, we essentially established the, what do you want to call it, the rag trade cloth, through tariffs.
Yeah,
because otherwise Britain would have had all the machines for all the not the growing the cotton and everything, but the ability to actually make cloth and thread, they had all that, and we essentially protected it till we had enough machines here to be able at least to have a fighting chance. But everybody does it to a certain extent because you don't want somebody to be able to pull. I mean, I don't think anybody would have a problem with us needing a few steel companies. I mean. What if the whole world hates us and we need to build a ship or a plane? We got to have a steel company, don't we? I mean, there's a certain level here.
Chief,
but the problem is we have a blowhard that lobs this out at people without any sort of detail, and I'm concerned that the population doesn't themselves look at the detail. Which, I think that if we had no any kind of controls on lumber production, I don't think there'd be a lumber producer left in the U.S., would there?
Well, you've already got that problem, though, in a lot of areas. I mean, you take a look at what's happened.
But we have some.
But you take a look at what's happened to, like, for example, aluminum and steel. Okay, I'm way more concerned about those two, and aluminum in particular. The Alcoa was the producer of aluminum products.
Yeah, they were like a big monopoly, almost.
Well, fairly close, right? All right. The only thing Alcoa produces today, when it comes to such things, is very specific grades of aluminum that are used in aerospace applications. commodity aluminum is no longer made in the United States. And that is simply because coming out of China, whatever have you, is cheaper. Okay, it that's all it is.
It's a very dirty. Now, it's a very dirty process.
It's an extremely dirty process. It's very energy intensive, and I have long argued that you know, I mean, this is one of the central points I've made, Chief, long before I start showing up on your show. Okay, is that you have to have wage and environmental parity tariffs in any nation if you're going to have balance in your trade environment, because otherwise, anyone that's willing to screw their population with pollution of various sorts or slavery.
How about tariffs where they pay their CEO $250,000 a year and we pay ours $250 million? Is it should we even that?
If you screw yourself that way, do I think we should be protecting CEO's $250 million salary? No. However, if you have a situation like you have with essentially everything that comes out of both India and East Asia, essentially the entire Asian continent, right? For all intents and purposes, all of it, Bangladesh, Vietnam, all of it, where you have, for what all intents and purposes, are slave labor manufacturing environments, and a basic, good God, you take a look at Mumbai and just look at some of the photographs and video that comes out of there today. The place is a garbage dump, for crying out loud. Okay, and yet virtually all of our pharmaceutical manufacturing, if not the actual pills themselves, all the precursors are being sourced out of Asia, okay, including India. That's insanity. It's flat out lunacy level stuff. We allowed the same thing to happen with electronics manufacturing with regards to China and Taiwan. And China, however you feel about them as a country, the fact of the matter is that they, just like India, are very heavily culturally aligned towards people who just aren't considered to be human. They're slaves. And unfortunately, whether you like it or not, this is...
Well, there's definitely a difference in the value of humans. I mean, there's no question about it.
Well, yeah, Chief.
But we've had that here. I mean, we have that now.
Yeah. Well, but...
To a certain extent.
Allowing our country to be infiltrated and overrun by people that do not have the set of values that Americans have, and then turn around and claim... I'm entitled to something because I'm privileged because of blah, whatever blah might be. That's not an American value either, and yet we allow that kind of crap.
Well, we have mistreated all kinds of people in this country. I mean, it's not like we have a clean slate. I mean, okay. I'm not one of these, bleeding that we got to give everybody something from happening. Let's just say the 19th century was a pretty awful century for everybody.
And you know what? And we weren't there. And historically speaking, if you take an objective look at history, this is by no stretch of the imagination was that a unique experience. Okay.
No, that's what I'm saying. The whole idea that we're sort of we always have managed to import people to do the jobs that we didn't want to do, and then sometimes we let them assimilate, and sometimes we didn't.
Well, but again, you take a look at this bill that's currently out there that Congress is trying to sneak through under a so-called Republican majority. We have a really serious problem with illegal immigrants. Well, we do have a very serious problem with illegal immigrants. So let's just give amnesty to all the ones that work on farms because they donate to the GOP. All right. Now, there was a period of time in this country where we actually had, and it stopped when the Hart-Celler Act was passed, which, you want to talk about people who should be hanged in effigy, and if we could find a way to get their soul back long enough to torture them, I'd do it. The We used to have a really serious guest worker program for that, for agricultural labor like that. And we could do that in today's world in a way that was absolutely airtight. Number one, there's none of this, I don't pay tax. Look, we do the same thing with OPT right now. All right, you want to know what one of the biggest problems is in the actual skilled labor area? Is that you have people, if you are in school, you're a foreigner, you're here on a student visa, you can use a program called OPT. Okay? Now, this sounds like it's good because you take people that are postgraduate, they're studying PhDs, whatever have you, and they are able to get into the workforce on a temporary basis. I think it's a 2 or 3 year right to use, essentially, within the American industrial system. Here's the screw job, Chief. Those employers don't have to pay payroll taxes or FUTA, federal employment tax, on those people during that period of time. Now, you say, well, but they can't collect it because they're not citizens. Okay, that is true that they can't collect it, that they're not citizens. However, the fact of the matter is what you just did is you just gave an employer a roughly 10% labor cost incentive to fire Americans.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with any of that stuff with those guys, but any of these little things.
There are over 100,000 of those individuals active in the tech and medical fields right now in America.
Well, the person that comes over here goes to school and figures this place is better than where they came from and wants to stay here. I don't see why there shouldn't be some sort of path to citizenship there. And they're not all Chinese plants.
Well, no. Wait a minute. I do for a couple of reasons.
Well, you do. Everybody wants to shut the door on people behind them. Come on. Everybody's got a little bit of that in them. I don't have as much as some people.
No, I want people. I absolutely reject the premise that there is anything organic about the fact that once you have in-group preference allowed to take hold, and you have a situation like we have in many of these tech companies, where hiring managers all the way up to CEOs,
I'm with you on all that stuff,
are Indian, and then what they start doing is their meetings and their job requirements are you must speak Hindi. Excuse me, no, because once that gets going, you are now essentially replacing the American workforce with people who are being imported, and the scams are ridiculous.
I'll tell you this, the amount of, there's a lot of, where Audrey lives in the Southwest side, there's a lot of people that have moved there, from some from India, some from Arab countries, I don't know where the hell they're all coming from, but the difference between the family structure and the performance in school, and everybody's always working, everybody always has a job. You look at some of the, no, I'm talking about everybody, the difference between that and some neighborhoods in the city, I mean, for God's sake, Carl, it's not even night and day. The Hispanic families, they all stay together. The kids are now all going to school. I mean, not everybody, but they all work. The parents come out and work. The kids are working. It's totally different than some other areas of the place. And some of the, I know people that have kids. The kids are 19. They've never had a job. They've never done anything. The parent does something around the house. The kid sits on the sofa. I mean, I don't know where we all of a sudden we. I mean, it's a very gross generalization. I don't know where all of a sudden we lost this.
I do.
Where? I do. On a cell phone or what?
No. This is actually kind of easy. All right, you've participated in it actively. You and your clients.
What?
You have participated in it actively.
I was at a job.
I know you did. So have I.
Tell me
how it is that when, since we were just talking about GM. Oh well, pricing has been so strong. Okay. A third of the cars being traded in, according to the latest survey that I saw yesterday, are negative equity with an average negative equity balance of $8,000.
You know what the term is there? Underwater.
Yes. Actually, that's not underwater. That's drowned.
Well, okay, you know, now, you know what? Now, when you come in, I had a I had an email from.
Let me
expand on your story there. When I had an email from a listener years ago, I said, gee, maybe you can answer this question. Why is it that the list price on a car is so much higher, well, I don't know if it is anymore, than what you actually spend on it? And I go, okay, it's what you just said. If the list price is $49 and you buy it for $42, that gives them $7,000 to deal with the car that you just traded in. It's $7,000 underwater. Because they can sell you the new one for list price, finance it for list, and make the whole thing go away, assuming you can pay the nut on the new one. That's why that is. How many people know that, you think?
Oh, I don't know.
Because this happens all the time. People bring a car in that they abuse.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
okay.
They abuse, and then the thing is, because people don't take care of it. I've seen people do this when I was buying my last truck in the showroom last time I bought a new one. The guy comes in and he goes, well, you know, your car is worth $8, but by the way, you owe $12.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have been listening to him, but the tables are so close. And the guy goes, well, is that a problem? Well, no. We were going to sell you the new one for $39. The list is $46. Guess what? You're paying $43. Okay then.
Yeah, but realize something, that what you just described is the financial scam of doubling leverage into a
I understand
rate,
that
of doubling leverage into a declining rate environment, which appears to work for as long as that environment lasts.
Well, in the last 20 years, I don't think you've seen a declining rate environment in car loans. Some of them, when they have the specials,
you've seen it in the economy generally.
Well, not in most, certainly not in credit cards. Certainly not in credit cards.
Okay, and that has a whole lot of relevance to the.
That's where most people's debt is.
That has a whole lot of relevance to the Goldmans of the world.
Well,
absolutely yeah. None, obviously, right? How is it? By the way, when does this stop? And the answer is, it stops now. You've still got a market that believes that this is never going to stop.
Well, certainly today. Yeah. Although yesterday we were right about here and we finished Unster down.
Yeah. Well, but
hey, I got a question for you.
No one believes that this is ever going to end. But if you take a look at federal government interest expense and the fact that it's gone vertical.
I will look at that if you want. But hey, I got a question for you. I'm reading this article the other day on CNBC, and they're talking about this massive Chinese. Now, neither one of us are big fans of China, right? But this massive Chinese scam going on, and I'm reading the article. I'm going, why does this have to be Chinese if these people are stupid enough? They're talking about some group out of China. Now, I don't know why it couldn't be out of our building here. I mean, it's so simple. I think I bought a gift card maybe once in my life, and it was probably 15 years ago.
Oh, I think I've seen this. I saw this.
Yeah, so when I went to buy the gift card, they wouldn't let me charge it. They said, no, you got to pay cash for a gift card. I said, okay. And it was like a $50 gift card, so I pulled out the grant, handed it to them, and I bought the gift card. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of cool, I guess. Maybe you don't want people running up gift cards on the credit card. I mean, I don't know much about the industry and still probably don't. Well, this article now is talking about some guy. Now, the implication is, you know, he's got the hoodie on and a whole bit. The implication is that he's black, but he doesn't have to be. He gets to the self-checkout at the Lowe's and starts rattling off what essentially a stolen credit card.
Right.
Rattling off, you know, dozens, I guess, of $100 gift cards.
Right.
Then he's on camera, but of course you can't recognize him or her. I mean, I think it's a guy, but I don't know. So then they go to another store. Do the same, and the guy comes back to the same Lowe's. He never got. Why would anyone at the Lowe's? Why would you let anybody rattle off 50 gift cards on a credit card? What would possess you to allow that to happen?
Well,
and how does the bank not stop it,
Chief? This is because.
But what is the greed here? I mean, the greed
The greed is obvious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Now, how hard is it for me as a retailer, right, who has a brain in my head, right, assuming I do, you've got one guy standing there going ka-ching, 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 yeah. Ka-ching, right? After, like, the second or third one, he's like,
yeah.
And oh, by the way, you know, we talk about all this stuff. I'm sure you've heard of this nonsense.
Well, if you read the same article, though, it's all about these dirty Chinese. You and I could have done that. Why does it have to be from China?
Okay, but then I'm sure you've heard about this nonsense with Flock going around, where they're sticking cameras on every pole they can. One of the places, by the way, that they're shoving them everywhere is in the parking lots of Lowe's and Home Depot. On private property. All right. Now, excuse me, but what sort of, you know, we've got this little problem with this geofence game, in that the government has for a long time tried to use this as a so-called legitimate investigatory tool. The Supreme Court swatted it down as a Fourth Amendment violation a couple of months ago.
Yeah, well, they swatted down tariffs. How's that working?
Well, here's the reality. Show up at Flock's office with a video camera and start tailing their executives home and doing the exact same thing to them that they're doing to you. And watch out. Watch how fast a cop shows up and arrests you for stalking and harassment. We have to get a whole lot more unreasonable with the people doing this kind of stuff.
We can't do anything. We're absolutely frozen by chaos.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, if I can, at some point, Chief, and I do not like where this goes, but at some point, if you can't vote your way out of a problem, okay, if you can't have the majority of the American population saying no more of this illegal immigration, no more of this displacing Americans with H-1Bs and OPT simply because they're cheaper. And even though the law says you can't do that, they're doing it anyway. No one ever goes to jail. Doesn't matter who it is.
No one of that level ever goes to jail.
The little guy goes to jail.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you or I do something that, you know, that is an act of fraud or whatever. We go to jail, all right? But, you know, you're one of these other guys. You know, look at, they just,
Carl is a, I wish we had a Dr. Blade on right now, because
we do. By the way, we just found out Dazak, you know, the guy from Eco Health Alliance, the organization was intimately involved in the gain of function research over in China that led to COVID. Okay, he came back through the United States. CBP had him on a high risk flag list. All right, so he was known to the customs people as someone who might be carrying some things that he is not allowed to transport, you know, like biological samples and stuff like this, right?
It doesn't matter. You got to take the little old lady and you got to prod her with the thing.
Well, here's the thing. They when he came back to the United States, they had every intention of interdicting him and at least going through his electronics and his baggage. Okay, you know, kind of a normal thing that happens if they think you're high risk for something, right? I mean, it happens to people all the time. All right, the FBI, the Biden administration FBI. Now, I don't know that Biden was personally involved in this, probably wasn't. But the FBI overrode CBP and told him to let him go.
Well,
what did he have in the bag? Why did CBP have him flagged?
Why did Bush let the Arabs fly out of here after 9/11? I mean,
the Saudis, who, by the way, were the people in the Sarasota, there were two stash houses, one Sarasota, one California. That's where all the money got distributed out of for the guys that did that.
Well, there were 17 Saudis, 3 Egyptians, and we invaded Afghanistan.
And by the way, Iraq was a bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay, which had absolutely nothing to do with Iraq, anything, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm a little tired of this, and at some point,
well, the more you dig, the more tired you get. I will say this: it's not just this administration, but
no, absolutely not.
The ability of people to keep up with the chaos. Now, no matter what bad stuff happened 3 days ago, you wake up this morning and we're talking about this very ignorant tariff announcement. Now, whether it gets shut down, whether he decides against it, but it obliterates the bad news from 2 days ago. It obliterates the Iran fiasco. If you just keep it coming, you obliterate all the other stuff. You obliterate Epstein. You obliterate, and I really would like to see. I mean, I don't know how much you listen when Wayne and Andrew were on, but the history that they've weaved back on this international, everybody, we even forget it, the people here on the show. I mean, Lou one day was about when the Ukraine thing started, came in with a report one day. Well, he obviously was telling us about it. He did it somewhere else or what, but about the inability of the Russians to get roller bearings because of the embargo, whatever you want to call it, we weren't going to sell them roller bearings, whatever you want to call that, and they couldn't get them. All right, so no money was going back and forth. And now here we are 4 years later in the Ukraine war, and somehow or another they seem to have gotten their roller bearings. Lou has not come in and said, all those train cars that couldn't run anymore, well, they're still sitting there. There hasn't been a train going by in 3 years, and they're all screwed up. Somehow or another, it got itself back together. Now, somebody managed to buy some roller bearings, and they managed to get money from someplace to someplace, and the person who sold it to them somehow must have got paid. Yet, it appears that people like Epstein and his ilk can make these things happen to the point where you have the Secretary of Commerce, when he was ahead of, Cantor Fitzgerald or something, was going to the guy's island to talk to him with his family.
Yeah.
If we don't find somebody with some backbone to do something about some of this, and we allow who's ever in office to point our anger or whatever they feel like they want to point. All right, today we're supposed to be angry at the Canadians. Oh, last week it was the Iranians. The week before that, it's the Venezuelans. They're shoving people's thoughts all over the place. And people somehow along the line got to shake their head and say, enough, enough.
Well, look, you have two people who are Africans. I think they're out of Somali, who were operating in Ohio. They ripped off $9.5 million. Okay.
Which is one day's pay for Musk, but go ahead.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But they ripped off $9.5 million of American taxpayer money. Okay. And somehow they not only managed to steal the money, then they managed to get out of the country with it. And oh, by the way, we don't seem to, think any of that kind of thing is...
Well, we passed laws so FIFA didn't have to pay any taxes here.
Well,
it's a question of where you want to look. I mean,
and by the way, the bar that was pulling beers for all the people that were over here to watch that, they sort of liked that, right? Right? That's not stupid. On the other hand, what is this nonsense about? That entire operation is tax exempt.
The only people I think are not tax exempt are the actual money that the players made. I have a feeling we're going to get a chunk of that.
Well, that's right. The actual money paid to the players is subject to tax.
Well, what if they? One of the guys was, of course, I seem to find people arguing where it is, was saying, What if they just pay them in their British bank account? I said, I don't know. IRS is pretty good at that. You can't just do that. But what if they did that?
We tax people on worldwide income, yeah. So,
well, I mean, if Messi gets paid in his Argentinian bank account, how exactly do we access that?
If he tries to come back in the United States, I'm assuming you straight to jail.
Well, I mean, the FIFA big shots are going to get their bonuses in Switzerland, and they actually have some states. You ask yourself why they were in Kansas City, Missouri, California, New Jersey and somebody else passed a law saying they were exempt from state taxes.
Now, why am I surprised by that?
Yeah, and that's when that sort of games, or Georgia, because they had so many games in Atlanta. Yeah. I have a newfound respect for Rahm Emanuel for telling him to go pound sand.
Well,
and he didn't want him in Chicago.
You know, I am not a fan of a lot of the nonsense that went on with that, but, you know, go ahead and try to do something about it. I think it's just like so many other things.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's a question of who you point to. I mean, if the president comes out and says it's all immigrants stealing all this money, well, nobody likes an immigrant, right? Nobody. So yeah, it's really easy to hate.
Nobody likes people stealing.
Well, okay, but there's a psychological thing, and I noticed this when I was on the board of the SIBO. And it's a weird phenomenon. I've talked to my psychology buddy, Dr. Blade, a few times about it. And if it's something that is on your level, when I said whatever level you happen to be, and you can't even understand the next level, that's why you listen to News Radio 78, and they'll talk about somebody who stole, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 on the, you know, whatever the COVID thing was for paychecks.
Right.
And everybody wants to screw that guy because he did something that you didn't do or you could have done and didn't or something. There's a levelness there that you can identify with if you're, I'll use the term, a regular person at that level.
Right. So
just like when you're on the CBOE board, if some market maker went over position limit, you know, 3 days in a row by 5 contracts, which didn't hurt a soul, didn't make any difference to anybody. He's now a recidivist. He has no respect for the law. We got to really spank this guy. Yet, if you had some firm that did something egregious, well, we can't go after the firm. God bless. That's our business. You know, there's right. A level at which, I mean, most people don't have a clue, and I don't. I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I'll zero in on somebody who, you know, did something in this business, in my business, that I can see. It's really hard for me to put my hands around the Musk situation or the president now going to sell insider information to people. You know, I mean, how many people even understand what that even means? I mean, how could you? If you're just if you could be a doctor operating on people all day long, transplanting lungs, for God's sake, and all of a sudden you sit there and wait a minute. Here's a guy that everybody's all over him for insider trading. He manages to have dodged his bullet somehow, and then now all of a sudden he says, well, why, instead of doing that, I'm going to sell the ability to other people and I'll just get paid for that. It's how do you even talk to, I'll say, a regular, if you've ever groomed a doctor, they wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a question of where you want to look. I mean, people want to look at, I mean, he's been very successful at pointing people towards people in immigration. Yet nobody looks at the amount of people that are not citizens that were promised citizenry when they joined the Army, now have an honorable discharge and still aren't a citizen. They just kind of forgot that part of the promise. Nobody cares about that. Nobody cares about the person who's been here for 25 years and actually got a Social Security card in 1990-something when they were giving them out to people who had green cards. And they're still here, they're still paying, and guess what? They're not going to get... How are they not a citizen, for God's sake? They've been here for 25 years. They got a bank account. They had a Social Security. They had a job. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, yeah, well, I want somebody running across the Rio Grande tomorrow and being a criminal?
Chief.
No, but I mean, don't look at the system we have. It's horrible.
Okay, you're right. Okay, however, that's like saying that let's just take an example. You're with this Afghan, you know, with the Afghan people that helped Americans, right? And you know, or foreigners that enlisted and were promised this. Yes, there's a problem there. But we're talking about
them. I'm talking about Hispanic people that grew up here that have served in the Army.
Okay. How many of those people are we talking about?
I actually dug up one day how many people have honorable discharges that are not citizens, and it's a substantial number. It's in like 100,000. Okay. I'll go back and check before, but it's
all
a
right,
lot.
Well, let's say it's 100,000. Okay, we'll just give you that number. Okay, there's 40 million illegal aliens in this country right now.
What I'm saying is we need to fix the whole thing. Not
uh-huh.
just
and you know what? You start, because here's the reality of this. We don't know where the balance point is in our economy from a standpoint of labor, because we've deliberately destroyed it with this. We've done it in agriculture. We've done now. They ran out of room in terms of getting what they wanted, doing it with by having those dirty bastard Mexicans that crap in the middle of the fields and put the cyclosporidia all over the place. That's not enough, because, oh boy, we've got to have more leverage in the system as a whole. So now all of a sudden, Disney turns around, and Disney, this was quite a long time ago.
Hey, are they going to stop this murder?
Let's bring all these H-1Bs in. Okay. By the way, if you object to this and you don't train this guy, you don't get any severance.
What percentage of the population even knows that there is an H-1B program? That's how these people sleep around everybody.
Well, okay, and then you take a look at that infographic that's been put up. Just walk into any mid or lower rank, common flop house type hotel, clean, blah 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 blah, but whose name is the managing person on the wall? His last name's Patel.
Hey, I know a guy here named Patel.
Well, okay, guess what? I do too around here, all right? But here's the problem with this. How'd that happen? Okay, where essentially that entire segment of the economy got taken over by this. And then the same thing is happening in coding, in all sorts of tech. It's all over the place. And once it gets into the management level, these people violate the anti-discrimination laws against Americans. And now all of a sudden you've got a problem that you can't get rid of. Chief, the problem with this is it's all done because the labor's cheaper. Okay, so what this does, though, is this impoverishes people who are Americans. It brings them in. People who consider this an upgrade. You go over to Mumbai, and you've got trash all over the street and literally crapping in the river.
Sounds like New York.
Right. Well, guess what? And if you come here to the United States, it's better. So even though it's...
Everybody came here because it was better.
Oh, yeah, but you know what? They didn't come here to live as we do. They came here and they brought their culture with them. That's a problem.
Wait a minute. Everybody did that. The Italians, there are very few people. My grandfather was one of the fewest, the only people
and
I
you
knew.
Know what, and you know what? When it is a small percentage of people and you can't get away with it, all right, if you have a nation of, say, 100 million people, and you bring a half a million people in, and you tell them, we're not changing to suit you. You're going to change to suit us, or get out.
Okay, everybody has... Chicago had more Polish people than any other city in the world except Warsaw.
Okay, look. You are... If you want to believe that you can take a bunch of people that don't have what we consider to be reasonable American values, bring them in here and let them change the culture of this country to be what they came from, where they came from, and that we'll survive that, you're out of your mind.
I very few people, my grandfather's from Italy, of course, well, one side, the other side, well, the grandfather on my other side I never met, he's from Ireland. One from Italy was a very rare dude, and he wanted... They didn't speak Italian in a house. He refused to live in the Italian neighborhood because he was an American now. Yeah. How many people are comfortable doing that when other people around you speak your language? In the Lithuanian section here...
Guess what? The challenge of allowing people in is those are the people you want.
But what makes... I mean, they had... There's a... I don't know if they're both still open. They probably are not. In Marquette Park... They had two Catholic churches on essentially the same block. One was Lithuanian and one was Irish. And the Lithuanian church had three or four masses in English, and the rest of them were in Lithuanian. Yeah. And what do you do with these old people? You tell them you can't go to church unless you learn a language? I mean, they brought the people over. They worked. Their kids worked. They went to school.
You can go to church all you want, but what? Look, you are not supposed to be able to become an American citizen without learning and understanding. And
what harm did these people do?
Oh, God. So now you're telling me that shared culture has nothing to do with
the success
of a country?
I didn't say that.
Yes, so you did.
I said you brought Grandma over and she never learned the language. That's all I said.
Well, okay, then Grandma can't drive. Grandma can't get a job. Grandma can't do these things. And you know why? Because that is borders, language, culture are the definition of a nation.
Okay, when Dick Butkus, famous football player, they're Lithuanian. His dad worked at Pullman, and he also managed this big apartment building that had, you know, how many flats were in it that one of my buddies actually lived in. So Dick Butkus' dad went from his working all day as an electrician at Pullman. He never got a whole lot of promotion because his English was okay, but not good enough to be a general foreman. And he went and worked at the other place. He never ate dinner before 10 o'clock because he had two jobs he worked all those years.
Okay.
So you're telling me we should have kicked him back? He wasn't good enough?
No, I'm telling you that what you couldn't have done is given him a CDL and let him drive an 80,000-pound missile on an American road because he can't read the sign that says construction ahead.
He was able to read drawings, all that stuff. He just wasn't strong enough with the language to be the chairman of the. He knew English, but wasn't his first language.
He certainly was
able to drive and knew where it said, you know, 55th Street.
Okay, and by the way, we just had another guy who was convicted. He ran an Indian here illegally in the United States, got a CDL in California, which didn't care, ran his truck without even trying to slow down.
Kevin says, by the way, we managed to cope with Latin Mass when we were young.
Well, listen, Latin Mass was one of the Pope's all pissed off about this and has started excommunicating bishops and priests that continue to do it.
Well, those guys are considering, but they don't just do it. They consider everybody else a heretic.
I get that. I'm just saying.
You know that guy Lefevre that they booted out? Is he still alive? The Opus Dei guy?
I don't know.
He one of my buddies, well, acquaintances from Notre Dame, his family was into that big time, and so was he. He performed the guy's marriage ceremony.
Yeah.
Lefevre. Good Lord. Well, for those that don't know what we're talking about, there's a couple of different ones. There's a Society of Pope Pius X, and then there's the Opus Dei people and somebody else. They're convinced, when I was very, very young, God, it was in the 60s.
Yeah.
Early 60s. When
before
was it?
Vatican II. Yeah.
Yeah, when was Vatican II? 61 or 62?
Yeah,
something?
It was about that time.
These guys are convinced that anybody who's a Catholic after Vatican II that has English Mass and, you know, where the priest is looking at you instead of turning around.
Instead of facing the altar.
We're all heretics. I mean, it's not like they prefer that, which would be okay. I don't think anybody would have a problem if you did one of those Masses once a week and people preferred it. But to turn around and say everybody else is a heretic, we went to a, get a load of this, Carl. This is a crazy story. I've never told it on the air before. One of, this guy, I'm telling about it. He ended up talking about somebody who was a hot commodity. He got like a 3.9 or something in Notre Dame Aerospace. Then he did.
Oh wow!
And then he did amazingly well at. And he was a private pilot. And he did amazingly well at Northwestern Law School. Talk about everybody who did airline, any law firm that did any kind of airline work, was after this guy.
Yeah, you think?
Well, anyway, his dad croaks, right? So, and he's. He was at a place in Florida. I remember his house. They had some. There was an altar in the house, and I'm thinking, what the hell is that all about? But I never, you know, I was more worried about going to the track and looking at the girls than I was about the altar in the guy's house. So we go to this.
What's wrong with that?
But he's got his dad dies, and the funeral's up around Michigan, and there's some interesting creatures up in Michigan. So I borrowed the old man's 98, a big old boat. So there's like five of us pile in there. And I drive up there, and there's a lady and maybe four guys, right? So we pile up, we get in, and the service is in this kind of wacky house. We had a big room on the side that was like designed for people to have mass there, and I'm going, this is a little strange. And then there's a cemetery like right out in back for all these people.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And
everybody's kind of creeping in, and I'm going, is this just me, or does these people look a little weird? Well, so we're sitting down, and the young lady was with us. Remember how women used to have to wear a hat in church, right? Sort of like, right. You know, almost like the Muslim, you know, scarf, but not as bad. And so she's got nothing in her head. And one of the guys is not Catholic, a Notre Dame graduate, but he's an Episcopalian or something. Good guy, friend for life. He's sitting next to me, and he's real bright, attorney too. This guy starts this homily, and he's talking about we've lost a soldier in the fight against, like, all the other Catholics. And I'm sitting there, what is this? Yeah, what is this? And then he says, look, at we even have heathens in our midst.
Oh, God.
So Jean looks at me. Jean, she was on the show. She looks at me, she goes, is he talking about us? Well, and he goes, some people don't even have the proper attire. And I go, Gene.
Oh, here we go.
I go, Gene, yeah. I think he wants you to put something on your head. So, yeah, so we're sitting, and the other guy named Craig, he leans over and he goes, he is talking about us. So we were the heathens in the midst. All we did was go to our buddy's dad's funeral, and now we're the heathens in the midst. They were serious about this.
No, so you're not good enough.
We weren't good enough. So to say we went right to the bar after that was an understatement. Because what is with these? But those are the people he's trying to excommunicate.
Oh yeah, no, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
It's strange. All right, well, so get a load of this. I go to this thing the other night. We don't know if we have Hal on. If he's on,
he's up. So I don't want to jump in his time.
Well, you know, but it's all right when you guys together. So I go to this thing for the OEX.
Well, I'm here.
The OEX
Kenny's
people
here too. Did you know that?
Who is
Kenny?
Kenny popped in, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's still on.
I just wrote him, Kenny, you're here. You're good.
I responded to you yesterday. I said I was going to be on.
Oh, I didn't hear you. I came in a little late this morning, but I'm sorry. I knew it was late July, but give us 5 minutes, Kenny. What's going on? Well, in your world, you're back in Florida? You still at the Cape?
No, I'm still at the Cape. I'm here till the end of next week.
You know, the biggest shark they ever tagged is up there now, so be careful.
Yeah, I know, but it's not where I am. I think it's over on the over by the Wellfleet part of the Cape.
What are the guys, 13 feet long?
Yeah, is that what he is? I don't
know.
Yeah,
the biggest great white they've ever had, and he was scooting up toward the Cape. So looking for this guy named Kenny is what he said.
Yeah.
So you're feeling good. What are you making of this market, bud? Give us five at least.
I'm not surprised at all. I've been talking about this, that, you know, we're heading into earnings season. Stocks are priced to perfection. And Goldman said it yesterday. All these hedge funds are bailing out. Naturally, they're bailing out because that's what they do. They trade. They're not necessarily long-term investors like a place like Wellington or Capital or Fidelity or the big, big asset managers. And so I'm not surprised at all that we're seeing this kind of, you know, they come out with great earnings. Taiwan Semi, MU, SK Hynix, they all come out and they crush it. They blow the doors off the place and the stock gets sold. And, you know, the whole group is down. But that's not at all surprising for anybody, just because, you know, they're priced to perfection. They come out and they crush it, and everyone goes, well, how much better can it possibly get? This has to be the top, so they start selling it. And so that's what I talked about going into the earnings season. That's what I'm talking about now, because I'm not surprised by the reaction. Tomorrow we're going to get, you know, Google, we're going to get Tesla. It's going to start the kickoff of the Mag 7 names. IBM's going to report tomorrow, although we already know what they're going to say. Although you may get a surge in IBM tomorrow because they've already crushed it last week when they pre-announced, right? So you may actually get that, you know, a buy signal in IBM tomorrow.
I hope it can't be worse than 25%, one would hope.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not necessarily surprised at all. I don't think that people should be completely nervous, because what you're not seeing is you're not seeing complete liquidation. You're not seeing everything get sold. Everyone's running for the door at the same time. They're not. They're rotating. They're coming out of tech, but they're going into, you know, other sectors of the economy. So I think that's kind of a healthy rotation, considering that I do think tech names were stretched. Doesn't mean the AI story is over. I just think that parts of that trade were stretched. And so I think it's completely healthy and normal for it to kind of pull back.
Kenny, the other day...
get overdone.
The other day, this rotation, to me, is getting sort of weird. And I think it breaks itself down to, you know, if I had a client or you had a client, if somebody had a stack and they didn't like it anymore, first thing they're going to say is, where am I going to put it? I mean, the other day, the market looked like crapo, and the transportation average was up 3%. What would possess somebody to sell Micron and buy a trucking company? But evidently, they are.
Yeah, it is kind of odd to see the way the rotation is happening. But, in fact, it is happening, right? And you are seeing it, whether it's in basic materials, could be transportation, could be healthcare, could be, you know, consumer staples even, which are, tend to be more defensive and people get really nervous. But what you're not seeing, I guess the point is, you're not seeing just complete straight out liquidation. They're selling everything and they're selling it hard and they're all running for the doors at the same time. You're not seeing that. You are seeing pressure in tech, but you've got a bunch of hedge fund traders, plus the algos jump on. Then they break certain technical levels, which only cause the algos to go into sell mode even more. Buyers know that. They step aside, they let the damage happen, and then they go in and they scoop it up at lower prices. I mean, look what happened to MU. The thing was down 34% ever since they announced, you know, blowout earnings. Everybody had a $1,600 price target on it when it was trading at $1,200. It's now trading at what, $850?
Well, no, it's up 50. It's up 50 this morning, 916.
Oh, so there you go.
Yeah.
So exactly right, because now it got to a point where it almost becomes a value play because it's overdone to the downside. And I think that's what...
They lost more market value in that week than the biggest stock had market value in 2010. Isn't that crazy?
Right. Yeah, it is crazy. It is crazy.
What causes a stock like Caterpillar to up and down 2% a day? That befuddles me every day looking at that thing.
Yeah, Caterpillar, you know, should never be like that, right? It's a big kind of old...
Yeah.
But Caterpillar is now in the AI space, right? They create, one of their subsidiaries creates turbines, all this stuff that they're using for power generation for these data centers. And so now it's been drawn into kind of an adjacent name in the AI space, which has given it a little bit more volatility because it was never as volatile as it has been. But it's all about that. I actually wrote about Caterpillar a couple of weeks ago talking about how it's got drawn in and how they now people view them as part of kind of that AI ecosystem.
When you're on next week, I'll tell you a story about that of a family member that managed to sell back in the .com era. They sold a company that did fiber optic cables for essentially a .com price because everybody thought they were the same thing. I mean, they did well with it. Let's put it that way. We sold our company during the dot bomb thing. I said, I had a fiber optic company. He goes, nobody cared. We were priced like those guys. I go, okay then. So there you go.
I mean, you talk about Caterpillar. Caterpillar was up at the height of it back in early July. It was up almost 86%. That's Caterpillar. When was it ever up 86% in 1 year? Never, right? But because it got drawn into that whole trade. Now, they've taken out over the last month, they've taken out, hold on a minute, let's just see what they've taken out. They've taken about a 20% out of it. It's now rallied a little bit. They took it right down to the intermediate term trend line where it looks like it's going to find support, and then it's going to churn for a little bit. But, you know, that, in my view, is an opportunity on the pullback is the opportunity, right? Not chasing it at the highs, but on the pullback.
And well, next week, Kenny, we'll have some more time. We'll get you on when you're supposed to be on. But I want to talk a little bit about just kind of the money in the system and the prices, because this morning the news over in GM is how well they're doing because they're raising all their prices. And I'm like, well, duh, if you can do that, that works.
Have you tried a GM car these days? I think the basic price for a General Motors car is about $55,000, and that's no bells and whistles.
One of our listeners sent me a thing saying she bought her mother a new Lexus, and it wasn't even the biggest one. It was $72,000.
Yeah.
That's a number.
It's crazy. They were, you know, it's funny because I have an Infiniti QX60. It's a 2021, right? And it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's perfect. I keep it in good shape. No big deal. So I brought it to be serviced a couple of weeks ago. And then the salesman comes over to me. Oh, well, it's time to get a new QX60. Why? There's nothing wrong with mine, but okay. What do you want to say? $110,000 is what you want. I go, are you out of your mind?
What were they going to give you for years?
That bad for $110,000. I have no idea. I didn't even go. When she said $110,000, I just stopped. I go, no, no, thank you. I'm not interested.
For God's sake, the taxes is $10,000.
It's ridiculous. I go, my car's in very good shape. Thank you very much. Leave me alone.
Well, Kenny, be healthy, and we'll talk at you next week, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Kyle and Hal, you guys still with us? I think we are.
Of course.
Yep.
Yeah. So get a load of this. Just to let you know, Kyle, how different some of the people are I used to trade with in the OEX. First guy that runs up, hey, Tommy, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. guy named, I won't give his real name, but we call him Big Money Bunny. He's always a character, a nice guy. He goes, good basketball player, good softball player. He says, man, I listen to your show every day. He goes, I really like everybody. Now, get this. I really like that Hal guy. I go, why is that? Because he loves to argue. He gets you going. I go, what about me? I'm the guy he's always arguing with. He goes, you can handle it.
I don't enjoy arguing. I enjoy having conversations. Yeah,
he goes, I love that guy. He's always, he not only is so smart, but he says stuff that other people don't say, and then he loves them. He'll argue on any topic. I go, yeah, that would be him. So there you go. You got a huge fan.
Oh, okay. that's funny because my wife is the complete opposite.
Well, that's why opposite sort of attract, they say.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how many married couples are like, remember the, oh, God, I'm going to show my age. Remember the old Car 54, Where Are You? The two guys in the squad car?
I remember watching that in the 80s on, like, TBS late at night, and I got a kick out of it.
Well, who was the guy that was the judge in My Cousin Vinny? He was the one guy, and he drove. The big, tall guy. He was, what was it, Fred Gwynn.
He was the judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, and then he was also, what was he in, was he?
The Two Utes.
Yeah, what, he was in one of the, was he Herman Munster? He was something.
He was Herman Munster, yeah.
Yeah, well, but in his squad car, he never talked. And the other guy talked constantly. And they were a perfect match. And whenever
well,
they,
it was like Norm and Cliff, right?
Yeah. You know, but I mean, how many marriages
or
are like that?
It was like me and my buddy Sean. We called him the machine in the Navy. Sean never said anything. And if he did say something, it's like everybody waits for the word that he's going to issue.
Some people, I mean, how many marriages were, you know, the wife's the ever-ready bunny and the guy just sits there, and it's sometimes the other way around. You know, it works. I mean, it works, and people use, you know, they compliment each other, I guess. What's the story with these interest rates? They're doing this sublime creep. They went down a little bit last week when we had those two CPI and PPI numbers that kind of came out of somewhere. But now they've been creeping back up again, and I've got the 10 years.
Well, I think it's just maybe investors were expecting the Iran war to be over, and the Iranians are just the mullahs. I'm not talking about the 90% of the Iranians that just want to be free like they were in the 1950s and 60s. Iran used to look like New York City.
Yeah,
women used to go to college, and they were wearing short skirts in the 1960s, and so 90% of the Iranians live under a tyranny you cannot imagine. And 10% of the country controls it. And, you know, I kept thinking Trump's being played by these guys. They want to drag it out. And I think he's in a quagmire now. Because these guys, they say one thing to him in private, and then they say the complete opposite on Twitter.
Well, that we got involved in this, and we all know how it happened. Because he's told us how it happened, so it's everybody else. That we got involved in this was absolutely boneheaded stupid. However, there's things I'm really good at, all right? You want me to program a computer to do something, that's, you know, I'm your man, right? You want me to do structural engineering on a building, I'm probably not your man.
Yeah.
Just saying.
You don't want any fat guys in that building.
Well, don't cross the bridge that I'm the one that does the structural calculations on, right?
Because it'll be like 10 times the steel you really needed, but it'll be strong.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Or don't get under it, right? You're like the one at FIU where they had some people who really weren't qualified doing that work. But the thing is, Trump, he's... You have to realize where he came from. He very nearly got buried by being early on the turn in the late 1970s and into the first couple of years of the 1980s. And he got bailed out by his old man, and his old man conveniently died in the, you know, about 10 years later. You know, there's a whole big chunk of cash, right? But property development in a generally declining rate environment becomes a matter of you never pay anything off. Everything gets rolled over because every time you roll it over, the interest rate's lower, and therefore it's cheaper to carry the paper.
Yeah.
And that's a world that essentially everybody out there today, that's the only world they've ever known. Okay, and yet, and if you look at the interest expense at the federal
government. That's been the world. That's been the reality of the United States since the 1980s. Because I remember.
Well, that's right.
I remember car loans, interest rates on car loans. My buddy Steve would, in high school, would always take us to the Pontiac Firebird car lot to look at all the Pontiac Firebirds and Transams. Right. I remember the interest rate being 15%.
Oh yeah, but then. Hell. Yeah, so. The yeah. other thing is that when I was growing up, when I was a kid, my parents and you know, our family, we were invited to mortgage burning parties. Okay, because during that,
people were freed from the debt.
Well, from 1944, when the cycle last turned in the upward direction, from that point until it turned the other way in the early 1980s, you bought a house. With you know you and your wife, you raised kids in there, and you never contemplated the thought of refinancing because it was always going to be at a higher coupon.
Okay, yeah,
I mean there was none of that crap. So you took out a 30-year piece of paper and you paid it off, and then when you paid it off, then you had a mortgage burning party. Okay. We have, from the 1980s forward, that's not been true. Now, every time, a percent and a half, I can roll it. Now, it turns out that is, because it resets the amortization schedule, if you're more than a couple years into the mortgage, it's stupid. I can sit down, I can show you the numbers. All you're doing is giving the bank a bunch of money, okay? Yes, the payment's less, but at the end of the day, when you add it all up throughout time, that's reality. But what that also does is it drives the price of the house higher because if you're buying on payments, you're buying a payment. You're not buying a house.
Yeah. All most right. people make most people base their purchasing decision off what their payment's going to be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
It's why when people talk about their money, but even you, Carol, right now you're talking about the rates in those days, but you got to look at the other side of it. The price of the house was so cheap. We'd much rather do that. I have arguments with my...
I don't know if it was cheap, Tom. It was just... People also made a lot less money per year back then, so...
Well, yeah,
it was more affordable relative to someone's income.
Well...
And it was also very... It was smaller, too. It was a smaller house.
Just look at the math. This is what I...
But it was a smaller house. A smaller house, smaller footprint.
I bought a nice...
Less luxurious...
I bought a nice.
These houses are really luxurious.
I bought a nice big house in Beverly with a double lot, and I paid. The interest rate was
in
like,
Beverly. Were there movie stars?
No, in Beverly or in Chicago, but it's nice, but not that nice. It wasn't the Clampett's house. No, but I mean, I paid $135,000 for a place.
Yeah,
and my interest rate was 12. If I'd have hung in there 5 years later, the thing would have been worth $4. And my interest rate, I could have refinanced down for half of that. So when you talk about...
That was about, 1980?
Yeah, maybe, 85-ish.
85-ish, okay.
Yeah, 84-ish.
But, Chief, if you look at... Okay, back out the lens. Look at this from a larger perspective. If you look at the federal government interest expense, interest payments, and Fred has it back into the late 1940s, okay? When the cycle turned in 1982, which is when it did, okay? That was the top.
August?
Yeah,
Eastman Kodak, I was on the floor.
Yeah, you can argue precisely what day.
I was winning a contest on guessing the number of books in the library at that time.
Yeah. Point being that's when it turned. Okay, the tenor of government debt, of course, is not it's all due tomorrow, right? That's not how it works, because the Treasury sells. They sell fives, they sell twos, they sell tens, they sell some thirties. They do so. This stuff rolls. If you look at that graph, it continues to rise, as it was doing into the early 1980s, for about another 10 years. Okay. Oh, gee, isn't that interesting? The 30-year mortgage is based on the TNX. Boy, is that a surprise? No, not really, because the average tenor on a mortgage these days is about 7 years, or at least it was until the, you know, the craziness in the last few. So, but then if you look at that graph, you'll notice something very interesting. Even though the amount, the gross amount of federal debt skyrocketed from the 1980s to the all the way up into the 2018, 2019 range, the actual amount of money the government spent on interest grew very slowly or was unch through that entire period of time. And
well, 5 years ago, they were paying 1.5%, for God's sake.
Well, okay. But here's the problem. In after the 2008 speculative explosion, when it blew up, Bernanke actually said during congressional testimony on this that between Congress continuing to run large deficits, the executive cooperating with this by signing those bills into law, and the Federal Reserve doing what it was doing with QE and balance sheet accommodations and everything else, that they could essentially prevent the economic impact of all of these institutions blowing up in their face along with everything else from having a grossly disruptive impact on the economy. However, doing that had a use-by date. And the reason, and he was very clear about this, that you get away with this for about another 10 years. And that's about how long, and you'd better have solved the problems within the legislative and executive branches in terms of how you deal with these kinds of things by that time. Because if you don't, it's going to blow up in your face. And he was very clear about this. Okay, so if you look at what happened to interest expense in the federal government, right about 2017, 2018, it started to go vertical. And right before the COVID crazy, remember SVB blew up. And there was, oh boy, was there wailing and gnashing of teeth that this was the start of something really bad and it was all going to go to hell. All right. And right in front of that was when federal interest expense went vertical. Then, of course, we had the pandemic. They slammed rates back down to zero and threw, you know, threw $4,000 checks at people. You know, there's some people got six, you know. There's three tranches of these things, both administrations, Republican and Democrat. And oh boy, the government, the Treasury was able to roll some of this over, and that number, that line came down a little bit. But the cycle had turned. And so now, as soon as we came out
of
that...
By the way, the cycle had turned in 1982. The interest rate cycle had actually turned 18 months before the market reacted.
I understand that.
Because there's big lags on this, which I can't understand, but there are.
Well, there are. It's psychology. Okay, nobody believes that the game has actually changed. The problem now is that we pretended, you know, that this was all about, oh, we got to save the economy in the pandemic, whatever. No. What you're trying to do is stave off the fact that the rate cycle, the long-term rate cycle, has turned, that the trend is now from the lower left to the upper right. Will be times it goes down and there are times it goes up, but that's the trend. And if you don't stop the deficit spending, you're going to have a collapse across the board in asset markets and in the economy generally. And that line is straight up from the point.
Yeah, you can actually see it really clearly in my. I have this chart, Fred Graf chart, that I look at a lot. It's got, I don't know, 12 different yields from the 20-year to the 1 year, including the effective funds rate. And if you look at the peaks of the 20 and 10-year from 1980 to 2020, it's basically a downward sloping line.
Right.
And what the Fed does when it's expanded too much, it pushes the federal funds rate up toward that long-term rate, and it squeezes the yield curve until it's flat. And then when it wants to expand, it lowers the federal funds rate, and then the yield curve can go vertical again. If you look at today's yield structure, it's not inverted, but the slope isn't dramatically positive like it was in 2010 or between 2001 and 2002. I mean, it's pretty. It's a pretty flat yield curve right now.
Well, hell, that's,
if you look at it for the last year, it looks pretty steep.
Yeah, but Hal, that's true. But the problem is the Federal Reserve does not control the long term.
No, they don't. No
rate trend.
I think
nobody.
All right,
nobody
you got three.
I think it kind of pulls it down.
You got three people on this show that all know that. It's three people in this country that know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying the business. You know, when I
it's
when
an accordion.
I was younger,
it's an Chief, accordion.
When I was younger, Chief, people talked about the business cycle all the time. Now we have a whole generation that believe that it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And that is an extraordinarily
dangerous
thing.
It does,
thing.
But when you pour money in a system, it never comes out in the numbers.
Well,
the numbers are always positive.
Except now it is coming out in the numbers.
Yeah,
and
not really.
Okay, well, listen, I get it. But you look at... You look at, for example, this whole data center thing that's going on right now, right? This whole AI data center crap. Have you noticed that nobody actually builds them in their own name?
Yeah, it's sort of like anything dirty.
Well, why would you not build up? By the way, I put.
By the way, nobody ever puts a pig farm in their own name either, just in case.
Well, I would. So yeah. Well, gee, I wonder why. Right?
Yeah.
So I put an article.
Hey, man, I love the smell of cow manure along Interstate 84 in Idaho.
Oh, there you go.
Smells good.
I put an article up the other day related to this controversy and, you know, and what's been going on with it. And I pointed out that the way for states and municipalities to put a stop to this crap is, first off, you want to build one of these things, you have to do it in the name of the parent company. If Meta, Facebook, Google, whoever, X, wants to build one of these things, no captive LLCs. You do it under your corporate banner. Therefore, if I need to come after you, I'm coming after the $1 trillion concern. I'm not coming after this little tiny LLC you can bankrupt out.
You're talking about, you know, it's like you're talking like a schlump here. You and I, if we want to go, you know, get a even Hal with all his scratching being a professor, if we want to go remodel a house or start a plumbing company, we're signing over our house. We're signing over our wife.
I understand.
Where you don't think Elon Musk doesn't have a sign for anybody.
Well, guess what? There's ways to solve this sort of problem, okay? And so this is part of it. And the issue that you run into right now is that all of this stuff with always add more leverage into the system is at its core what it comes about.
By the way, Kevin wants to know if the Commodore smells like victory to hell.
What is that?
Kevin wants to know if car manure on the road smells like victory to you.
To me, I grew up near dairy farms, and to me, when I smell cow manure, I smell milk and money.
Well,
I don't mind the smell. I honestly don't. It's like George Costanza in Seinfeld. Ma, newer. Ma, good. Newer, good.
Well, there you go.
Well, Carl, you're the road you're walking down here, it's really a political thing. I mean, it's...
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Well, it is.
Mathematics are not politics. This is the problem, is people think that the politicians, including the central bankers, who, whether people want to believe it or not, are politicians, that they can change a cycle just like people believe in the 1800s, 1850 and then 1850s and then again in the 1890s, there were two dry cycles in the American West. They literally depopulated large parts of the landmass because there wasn't enough water for you to be able to grow enough crops to survive. All right, you literally, some counties lost 60% of their population.
Right. No, when I talk about the political thing.
Well, now here's the thing though, Chief. Did anybody learn anything from this? No, because in the 1930s, what happened? Hello, okay. So, and politics be damned, these cycles are going to play out whether you like it or not.
Where I'm going with the politics part of this, and I did, went through. Hal, I think you were on me last week. And I went through this. I forget what the other guy's name was, Cooper or something. Wrote a very succinct history of inflation in the United States. And he went through the idea of Civil War and after and so forth. And when you have a lot of what, Carl, what you're talking about, is if you decide for whatever reason, either it's COVID or it's a war or something, you, the government, we're going to spend more money next year than we did this year. Okay. You can do that in one of three ways. You can find ways to borrow it from overseas or other place, or your own people. That's one way you can cover it. You can raise taxes, or you can print it. You really have those three options. And if when George Bush decided to invade Iran, or wherever the hell, the right way to do this, and the right way right now, by the way, and this is kind of a neocon Republican, and there's Democrats that feel the same way, but this idea that if you're going to do this properly, of course he keeps saying the war was going to last 2 days or whatever, but that's a buffoonery thing. But if George Bush were to come out and said, we're going to invade Iran, by the way, it's going to cost X, so for the next 3 years, there's going to be a 15 or 20% surtax on everybody's income tax bill, I don't think we'd have gone. Because I don't think the same neocons that were pushing to do it were willing to fight that battle. Now,
well, probably true.
And so now, even this Iranian thing, when it's all over, it's going to cost us a shit ton of money. Okay, now, I don't see, President whatever coming out there and saying, by the way, the great big beautiful tax bill? I just blew that up. He's not going to say that, but he just did, right?
Well, of course he did.
Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, we're kidding ourselves here all along the way, because guess what? It adds up. like Kyle, you're always saying the numbers add up. And Hal looks at it kind of a different way. What are we doing on the money piece? And now we're doing even more bizarre things, because the people that are lending us the money, we can't wait to piss off, which is even more bizarre.
Well. But the basic core of the issue at the present time is that because of the change of the environment, the macro level environment, and the fact that this is going to go on for another 30 to 40 years with rates generally being higher, okay? And there isn't anything you can do about that. People think there is. There's not.
Well,
going to change. And so... You have to adapt to and live in the world that you're in, whether you like it or not.
Well, but the Fed is the linchpin here, and anybody who thinks that the Fed is not, I got a question. Hal, you probably got more of this history than me. Who actually, before there was a Fed, who ran the money supply and so forth during the Civil War? Was it the Secretary of Treasury? Al, are you there?
This says he is.
I think the Treasury was running a bond scheme. Sorry, I had a cough.
Who actually? It looked like whoever ran monetary policy during the Civil War did an exemplary job. Who was it?
I think it was the Treasury Department. It kind of operated as a central bank.
Okay, because they
in my readings of Rothbard in the Progressive era, I think it was. Basically that.
Because I mean, right now, if the chairman of the Fed really was concerned about interest rates, and when I talk about, I think I was mentioning to both the Bodias, is that we're the business cycle is still there, except we're masking it now. Hopefully, Larissa will be on tomorrow, or maybe not. But the way she talks is it's happening. It's just being overwhelmed by. You'll see, people on CNBC, Stephanie Link does this all the time, and it bothers the hell out of me. The consumer is great. They're strong as can be. And Larissa says, well, from a gross number standpoint, she's correct. Because guess what? Because of the price of everything are up so much, I'm spending more than I did last year, but I've cut stuff out. We don't go to breakfast anymore. We don't do this. We don't do that. But she goes, actually, if you look at gross numbers, I probably even have a little balance on my checking or my credit card, which I never wanted to have. So if you look at me over last year from this year, I'm spending more. You could say that So if you don't put the right inflation calculator on the GDP, you can tell people how great they're doing. Doesn't that bother you when people tell you how good you're doing? Somebody else? Well, it's like Chevy Chase. What, the pool, the pond would be good for you? It's like, in the movie. If you look at if you're going to be dumb enough to believe the gross numbers, and not look at the health of the individual person, you can mask this for a long time. We have, haven't we?
Yeah, I think they found a way to mask it. Yeah,
because I mean,
I think they've engineered a way to permanently mask it.
Yeah,
but well, I think they just delayed it.
If everybody else is driving around a 20-year-old jalopy, and the three of us go in tomorrow and buy a $100,000 pickup truck, hey, the numbers look great, don't they? We just that would have been 10 cars 5 years ago. Now it's 3. Everything's going good, isn't it? And if we say the inflation's really 2% when it's 5, well, guess what? Everything looks rosy, doesn't it?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I think if you drag this out long enough over a long enough time horizon, people like me and you, when we remember a Big Mac was like $2, we sound like old geezers from the 1940s talking about how malted shakes for 5 cents, and I could put my horse at the stable for 5 cents, and I could pay 5 cents for a Roy Rogers movie, right?
Yeah.
Young people today, their reality, what they grew up in, is a Big Mac costing $6. I mean, that's their reality. So if you can draw this out, I'll sound like that old geezer from the 1940s, right? And young people are like, man, that guy's a boomer, right? That's what they know. That's the world they observe. They don't know any other world. They don't know any other world other than the one where credit card interest rate is 25%. Being stuck on the tarmac in Dallas-Fort Worth for 6 hours and being lied to by a pilot is normal. The flight attendants passing out little cups of warm water and charging $10 for freaking M&Ms, that's just their world. They are used to that. You and I, we're not used to that. We didn't grow up in that world. So I think what has happened is they're stretching this out, hoping the old geezers die with their memories.
But it ends up being, I won't say it's a quality of life sort of thing, but there's a relevance to it. If somebody's making whatever your salary happens to be, the thing you're paying are some percentage of your wages. So if you're making...
But if you're a young person, this is the world you grow up in, so you think it's normal.
But you can't... You still can't think it's necessarily correct that a sandwich...
No, I'm just saying that's what they expect.
But a sandwich and a drink...
Expectations have all shifted.
They have. And I think the people...
People expect to be treated like chickens in an egg factory.
Right. And it's... But how do you break back from that? A lot of it has to do, like you're saying, it's not really competition, but somehow or another, I mean, I can.
Well, the airline industry is not competition. It's an illusion of competition. It is a cartel of companies that work together with these incentives that are really quite perverse. It's like the banking cartel.
Yeah.
It's like the medical cartel. It's like the food cartel. These industries are cartelized by government regulations. And I think Carl in an email mentioned that these companies have to meet a minimum standard of quality because that's what the regulation requires. So, you know, leaving 300 or 400 passengers on the tarmac for 6 hours is just what these non-competing airlines do.
Well,
incentives.
It's the incentives. Essentially, the problem in that circumstance in particular, I'm fairly aware of exactly what they were doing with that, is that the Department of Transportation counts.
It's a cartel.
Right.
It is.
But they treat customers
so poorly.
Well, they count an online departure. They count your departure time as when the airliner is pushed back from the gate.
Yeah.
Okay, not when it leaves the ground. So as a result, if they know you can't leave because the other end doesn't have a gate for you, for example, okay, you can't leave because there's nowhere for the plane to go on the other side, they will push you back from the gate and leave you sitting in a parking area on the ground at the source, because otherwise they get banged for not having made the online departure.
Yeah.
All right, so basically, they screw you because the way the government counts
that right there, that system right there leads to the need to make excuses that end up being lies. yeah, told they by do this, the crew.
They do this very much intentionally.
Yeah. It was the what really upset me, and I didn't yell at anybody, but what really upset me was the fact that we could have been in the terminal and I could have been working. I could have been charging my phone. I could have been charging my laptop, and I could have been working on my lessons or a paper. But they put us on the plane, and there's no place to charge. And I think one of the reasons why they got us off after 5 hours because everybody's phone started dying at that point. Everybody ran out of battery. And you can't have 300 people without batteries on the tarmac.
Right.
You can't have that.
You used to have that. Nobody had a phone.
Fortunately, I had mine in super safe battery mode, man. I could have went another 5. I had it set at the most extremely minimalistic battery settings.
If you're going to be a world traveler, Al, the first thing you got to do, because I would, because I don't travel much anymore, but is get one of those things that have like 5 recharges and you put it in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't travel enough to do that, so I was only traveling to go do maintenance on my rental property in Utah with my brother and my nephew. So the work I was looking forward to, but working with my brother and my nephew was...
Well, the whole attitude changed, and I flew back in the day before they were deregulated.
Flying used to be fun. It's a horrible experience.
But back in those days, you could go from airline to airline. Everybody charged the same amount, and it was way too much, right? It wasn't competitive. But the competition, the service was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Hell, Braniff, the stewardesses, they weighed everybody.
You mean the flight attendants today?
Well, they were, yeah. But they wore Gucci gowns.
Right.
That's how Southwest got its start, right?
Well, Southwest had all
of having very attractive flight attendants.
And they would actually sing to you when you took off.
Yeah.
We had a client in Phoenix. And the guy, he had nothing but money, but we love Southwest.
Doesn't it seem like nobody has any fun on the airlines anymore? Oh, I don't see any fun at all.
But if you flew South, they had the 737, you know, like 200s or 100s. They didn't have anywhere near the range that they have now. So you didn't really get to Phoenix nonstop. They'd stop in Topeka or someplace. But the guy would hit the ground. And literally, this guy's name was CW. You can always tell the Southwest gates because there's skid marks at the gates. The guy hit the ground in Topeka, Kansas, and he's going about 80 down the auxiliary runway to get to the gate. He like screeches to a halt at the gate. They got everybody off there, and people are on. It couldn't have been. I'm not exaggerating. It couldn't have been 10 minutes. And there, people are still putting the stuff in the upper head, and nobody even took a seat. And he's already backing out.
Yeah.
I mean, and then the girls get out up in front, and they sing, "Fly Southwest, Fly Southwest." They all used to live on, I don't know if you've been to Midway. You know where Midway is.
I don't see any of that fun anymore. It's all like vanilla.
Well, they all used to get out of there. Yeah. They had people that rented rooms and houses. Midway is on the Southwest side, and there's this railroad thing. We had to cross the railroad thing. And then on those blocks, a lot of those houses had all the stews, like they hot bunked with all the other ones. So you'd see these beautiful girls walking down the street at 10 o'clock at night. And all of a sudden, the city got all their underwear in a knot because these were people acting as hotels, you know. But actually, what was happening is somebody would buy the house and like 5 people would be on the deed so they could all stay there instead of having to go to a hotel. Now, of course, everybody got all pissed off at that. But, hey, what do you say we do a quick break since we didn't do one, and we'll be right back. SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 353. We kind of were here yesterday, and we finished up down. I'm not predicting that, but it just did happen yesterday. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and OPEC Stocks and Jacks, real quick. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 365. We have GM actually came out with the good earnings saying how they raised their price. They're actually down 15 cents. Anyway, so that's where they are. We have Dow futures up 55, up, make that up 95. Over in Asia, we've got these guys, the Nikkei's got to be open today, I would think. They are open. They're up 2,000. It's 3%. Now, they were down 4% the last time they were open, so they made most of that back. Hang Seng down 10, call that flat. Shanghai up 68, 1.8%. And these guys, for some reason, are not going in tandem these days. They usually were or are, but not these days. DAX up 3, call that flat. FTSE up 9, call that flat. CAC down 9, call that flat. So we got a sleepy one over in Europe. Bonds, again, not much, but up 1 basis point. 4.6 now on the 10-year, and 4.5 was the one we were looking for, and now we're at 4.6. Oil up $1.73, almost $85, $84.96, as the Iran thing continues to seemingly worsen. Gold up $45, silver up $2.20, so that's a big rally there. Foreign exchange, and again, we look at this, Japan is almost at 163, 162.76. That's the one you have to watch out for, and I'll talk to our guys here in a second. Those guys have to start selling $200-300 billion worth of treasuries because they still own like 960. They start doing that, I mean, it's going to cause some real problems. And I don't think our guys have thought that through. I have a feeling they have, but maybe they have. Bitcoin up 1,300, 66,477. Real quick, traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 747 here in Chicago. We're looking at 75 degrees right now with a high of 84. Partly sunny with a passing shower or two this afternoon. Tonight will be chance of rain, otherwise cloudy and windy with a low of 64 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 84 degrees right now with a high of 104. Rather cloudy with a thunderstorm in spots this afternoon with risk of flash flooding. Tonight, overcast, then partly cloudy with a low of 85 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 26 minutes. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 40 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 34 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 31 minutes. Finally, sports. Yesterday, the Sox dominated Rangers 10-3. Cubs lose to Tigers 8-6. And Diamondbacks lose to Athletics 5-2. Today, we got White Sox at Rangers 7:05 p.m. Tigers at Cubs at 7:05 as well. And lastly, Athletics at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
By the way, guys... Our man who had Spain all the way from the beginning was none other than Ricky here. I hope you made some dough on that, Ricky.
I did not place a bet, man. I'm really bad at betting and stuff, you know, so I didn't want to, like, get my bad luck onto them.
Guys, do you think your bad luck travels if you bet on a team they're going to lose because you bet on them? That's an interesting view of life, Rick.
It's happened before, you know, so I stay away and just hope, you know.
So I should stay away from the Irish if I bet on them, I jinx them?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you have the bad luck I do, you know.
What do you guys
think? I generally don't bet on anything other than maybe a blackjack and poker. That's the only thing I'll bet on. The house has too much of an advantage.
I like, I'm done a while, but
like
I like
Metallica
blackjack.
Says, your luck eventually runs out.
Are you like a half-ass counter like I was?
Half-ass what?
Counter.
Counter?
Counting the cards in blackjack.
I think I just have a kind of a feel for it. I kind of know what.
Do you know the basic strategies? You know when to hit and double?
I've only played blackjack twice.
Oh, you're
and yeah,
you
both gotta, times I walked away with a lot more money than I started with.
Well, you're supposed to know when to double down, when to split
yeah,
pairs.
Yeah, I think I had this feel for it because I understand probabilities
right.
And understand the cards in general. So I just have a feel for it, natural feel for it. I haven't played enough to actually, and I haven't read anything about it. I just kind of have a feel for
well,
it.
You want to read Beat the Dealer of Jim Thorpe. And he actually was one of the first guys that modeled options as well. I think he's still alive. I'd love to get him on the show someday. But he's actually very bitter that nobody ever picked up his option modeling. Everybody looks at, you know, Black Scholes, and I think he might have been first.
Hmm.
Anyway, I'm looking here real quick on this. Japan, in the end of January, they had $1.22 trillion, and they're down to $1.14. So they've cashed in $80 billion since January in an attempt to keep that currency at 160, but they're not winning that war. It's going up every day, isn't it? We're taking some people down here in terms of these countries have this inflation, and hell, I think they're all kind of lying to their guys. It's like we're lying to us.
Yeah, I just think the environment in the United States is not as bad as it is elsewhere, and so the relatively freest nation, the one that interferes in lives of its citizens the least amount, allows people to allows people to have the benefit from the fruits of their labor the most is the one that's going to be on top in the next 20, 30 years.
Well,
ones that are the most onerous, the most over-regulating, they're the ones that are going to drive their populations into poverty.
Well, our
goal should be to be the freest.
And we don't want that. We only want some certain people to make money.
Yeah. Well, I want us to be the freest.
So do I.
And the two parties to me are Hamiltonian parties. One wants an international order, and the other wants an American to kind of run the mercantilism. And I'm neither Hamiltonian. I guess you could call me a Jeffersonian Republican.
Just on a
president.
I'm a
without the slavery.
I don't really give a crap if I'm a little bit to the right of center with the Republican guy that has some common sense, or a little bit to the left of center with a Democratic guy who might have some common sense. I don't want either one of these extremes, but boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
And I think an awful lot of people are in the same spot. Where's our guy or girl?
Well, to me, the political continuum is on the left or the right. I don't know what it is, but pick one side. There's total tyranny on one side and total freedom on the other side. And I think the Republicans and Democrats, they play this game where they pretend they're different. But both are offering solutions that push them toward the tyranny side.
Well, if you follow the money, they both are. That's why I didn't vote for Barack Obama.
Well, they get elected to protect their constituents from competition.
I will say I didn't.
They each have a different constituency.
But
their job is to protect.
But I think as time goes by, take Barack Obama for instance. I voted for him the first time. I thought he might have been some fresh air. He got co-opted so fast. Whoever was really running the place is. I mean, Trump thinks with his massive ego that he's somehow calling the shots, and he is, a terrorist and being a big bluster, and he started this war, and he's killing people right and left with that, but. It seems to me for the last 30 years, the people who control the money, the plutocracy, moves ahead no matter who's in office.
Yeah.
I think...
I would really like to meet the puppet masters. I would really like to do that.
Well, it's the people that are running.
No, you wouldn't, Hal, because then they'd use you as food for their pigs out back.
Yeah.
They would.
I mean, it's.
I would just like to meet them to know who they actually are.
I think you almost would need. Boy, oh boy, this isn't my personality.
It would probably make my skin crawl to actually meet them. I've met somebody that I felt like was influenced by some evil spirit, and it made me uncomfortable. It's like when I walk onto a plane, I can smell when somebody's sick. I'm like, man, I got to stay away from that guy because he's giving off some kind of odor where he is literally sick. Or I can walk by somebody, I'm like, man, that guy is a vodka drunk. I mean, but when we're in the people who are just motivated by evil, I can my skin literally crawls.
They don't think it's evil. They think they're doing
the right
thing.
No, they don't. But I can sense it. It's really weird.
I would say that if the three of us, and we all know Carl likes to jump on this more than most, but I'm going to say. In terms of a lot of stuff, I'm probably as much of a law and order guy as any of you guys. I mean, I think you probably have sensed that.
Well, protecting people's property rights is the most important job of a government. And the government that doesn't protect people's property rights, like, for example, in Gaza.
They protect the right people's property rights.
Yeah. Like in Gaza, for example. Why didn't the West Bank attack Israel? Well, in Gaza, property rights were not protected. They had 40-50% unemployment.
Yeah.
And who's going to invest in Gaza? This is before October 7th. Who's going to invest in Gaza if the property rights are not protected? So when government fails at its most important job, protecting people's property rights, then all of a sudden stores close and people start suffering. Because, and Walter Williams has the best explanation of how property rights work. You walk into a grocery store, you have the property rights to the money in your wallet. The store has the property rights to the milk in the icebox. And when you pick up the gallon of milk and you put it on the table and you give him or her your money, the property rights are transferred. Now the store owner has property rights to that money you gave him or her, and you have property rights to that milk. And when government fails to protect those property rights, those basic property rights, then you get situations of 40% unemployment and zero investment. So that is the premier goal, objective of the state, is to protect people's property rights.
Well, if
and unfortunately, in today's DSA-influenced Democratic Party, it sounds like they want to abolish property rights. Well, so that's actually frightening.
They're being miscast in what according to Andrew and Wayne, they're being miscast in the where some of the Democrats are coming from. But some of this stuff, I mentioned yesterday, but I do have a question for you guys. Instead of, if the three of us landed, can you imagine us arguing in the Oval Office all day, the three of us?
Well, I don't think it would be arguing. I think we'd just be having vibrant conversations.
Planning. We'd be planning. Okay, we're planning. I'm going to say that, you know, I'm appalled at what these ICE guys are doing. I think, and this is not my personality, we would need, oh God, almost like a secret police like that. I think there probably are 400 or 500 people that maybe are in plain sight that really need to be in jail. I mean, I don't. What am I doing agreeing with Carl? But
you're missing about 2 zeros on that.
Okay, but I'm saying. But, it would be a start, you know.
Look, I can solve essentially all these problems without having to resort to getting machine guns out, okay, which is where this is going to go if we don't solve these problems. It's just a question of who's going to use them first. If you want to solve the illegal immigration and the H-1B abuse, the visa abuse and all this, these problems, you can do this through internal existing laws. No one here on a temporary visa can go take out a 30-year mortgage when they've got a 3-year lifetime in America. Okay? Because no bank can write that under sound lending standards. Period.
But see, and when you
get out, now hold on.
Right,
now,
when you get on, when you get on this road, you're focusing on the individual and how they're screwing you. The person who's screwing you is the person who's bringing them here.
Chief, I get that, but if I make it impossible for them to distort the market in ways that screws everybody else, then I kill off the ability to do this kind of thing because it doesn't make sense anymore. This OPT program. Nope. The employer who hires somebody on that kind of a program has to remit to the government the employment taxes. Why? Because you can't give people a 10% financial incentive to fire
Americans and hire a
foreigner under the same salary.
My point is, you can't do that.
Hold on.
One other thing. No remittances. You're not an American. You can't send money out of the United States.
Okay, but why do you always have to focus on the guy who's the victim? The guy who's making the money is the guy in the top.
He's not a victim. He came here to screw people.
No, he didn't. Somebody brought him here to screw people.
Oh, excuse me. And he's not a voluntary participant?
He's just going to work.
Oh, come on, Chief. The guy over in Mumbai, who literally has crap on the street and the rivers flow.
Why do you always focus that way?
He comes here because he sees
environment. Somebody is here making $75,000 because the going rate is 100. You can piss all over that guy all you want. He's just going to work.
I don't want to piss on anybody.
Go ahead, Al.
But the key to immigration, I think Milton Friedman had it right on this one. You can't have an open border. I mean, I'm an advocate for no passports, no border walls. I'm an advocate for that.
But no
free
welfare.
Flow of people. But the problem is, as Milton Friedman pointed out, is you providing them with an incentive to come here that is not based on I want to come and start a business. There are the financial incentives where I'm going to roll in these systems, these public assistance programs, And in the presence of all this public assistance that the United States offers, we can't have an open border. I want an open border. What does that mean? We have to get rid of all these public assistance programs.
Yep.
And then return it to the private sector where it should be.
That's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So
if you don't get
it's
the
not going to happen. If you don't get the, it's not going to happen.
If you don't get the people at the top, while Carl's chasing the HB1 program, there's going to be an HB2 program, and while you're chasing the guys
No, there's not, Chief, because I'm going to throw all of the CEOs who did this in prison.
I think that's where you need to sort of need to start.
I don't think we need the prison for that. I think what we just need to do is we need to have free... We need to have markets that are free of government intervention.
You're in a dreamland. It's never going to happen.
I know it's never going to happen, but that's what I want.
Okay, well, guess
that's
what?
That's the world that I want.
Well, okay, but I'm focusing on...
But it's not going to happen. Like you said, it's not going to happen.
I'm focusing on the world that we could achieve.
Which
is to cut off the financial incentives, cut off the ability to scam using the financing, make it unprofitable. It's the same thing with wage and environmental parity tariffs. The reason you do them is you make pulling the scams unprofitable, and they'll stop.
Well, Carl, we got a dash here, guys, but Hal is in a little bit of a dream world, but so are you. You're not going to get people to worry about antitrust when 90% of the people don't even know there is an antitrust law.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, if we don't put
antitrust is a result of government cartelization of
regulations
and rules.
Well, you guys mentioned the airline industry. Well, how did the airline industry get like that? We had, let's say, 8 airlines.
The DOT and the FAA.
Okay, but if one took over 5, oh, man, 2's got to be able to take over 4 to stay competitive.
Well, not only that, look at what just happened with T-Mobile. There used to be a bunch of different carriers. T-Mobile buys Sprint. Okay, their promise that they made to everybody, and they executed on this for 20 years, is that if you were on a plan, as long as you didn't make changes to it, you could keep it, whatever it was, historically, okay? They have now screwed me, personally, twice in the last 10 years, both of them for about, this last one, which just went into effect, is $6 a line, so it's $12 between the two lines. The last one was a $10 screwing. And in order to avoid it not being a $25 screwing, I can't use a credit card to pay the bill. I have to put it on a debit card of some kind. So the squeeze is always there. Now, what they've said
The squeeze is there because it's a cartel.
Well, but it's exactly.
It's not competitive. And, it's the illusion of competition.
Well, we got to go. You, by the way, Carl, I'm going to give you a kudo here. You brought up that Discover should never have been allowed to be taken over by Capital One.
Absolutely not.
Okay, well, I actually love my Discover card, and now I'm not using it. I don't want to be Capital One. All they're doing is sending me stuff about how much they're not going to do for me going forward. Okay, then. So I'm trying to find a credit card I like better. But, I mean, that should never have happened yet. Nobody gets it. Or they
no,
do.
I understand. No, I'm with you on that. Yeah,
and people look around and they go,
that a problem?
Yeah, right. How is it there seems to be three or four airlines left? And oh, by the way, I screwed on every one of them. Well, duh, nobody knew there used to be 10.
A cartelized, the state has cartelized it into what appears to be competitive, but it's not competitive.
No,
it's not competitive.
It's collusive.
Right.
Anyway, guys, good stuff. I was going to run by next week, Hal. We'll talk about, you know, my visions, which are very close to yours, scary as that is, regarding how everybody should be, you know, things should be even for everybody in terms of regulation and so forth. Yet I see some of these people with the tax the rich stuff, which I'm vehemently appalled by. But then I see some of the favoritisms on the tax base, like FIFA just got, like some of the, you know, a piggy move up on the stock. I'm not so sure that a lot of these people...
Everybody should be treated equally under the under law.
But now all of a sudden the people that are being branded as socialists saying, tax the rich, it's almost like I see where they're coming from because that's where all the money is.
Well, I see their frustration.
Yeah.
I see their anger, yeah.
I mean,
I understand their anger.
The guy making...
I don't agree with the solutions.
I don't either, but I mean, when you know Kevin works his fanny off to try and get people working from $15 up to $35-$40 an hour in some of the distribution areas is in the area in Indiana. He does other stuff too. And I'm sitting there going, okay, Kevin, knock yourself out. Get somebody up to $40. you still can't tax them. There's no dough there. I mean, the regular person is just getting so far left behind here. It's
well, that's why there's MAGA, and that's why there's this group of people that are supporting the DSA. You have this rage, this Marxian rage. I understand the Marxian rage. I just don't want the Marxism.
I would agree. Guys, have
a
good one.
Or the neo-mercantilism.
Okay, good one. Good thing we heard from Kenny. That's good. He's doing good. So we'll have I actually got to go on with Joel's people at 9 o'clock, so that should be fun. Anyway, you guys be good. Talk Hal next week and Carl on Friday. S&P futures up 29, NASDAQ futures up 385. Again, we were kind of like right here yesterday and went the other way. Maybe today we'll hang in there. Either case, we'll let you know tomorrow on Stocks and Jocks.